Lord, everyone. Oh, it's good to be in the house of God today. A little less snow than last week. Amen. Boy, winter has just held on, has it not? I can't remember the last time I've been approaching my birthday with snow. Joke's on me, I guess. It's always on me. This one's not funny. Oh, it is just good to be back. Good to feel better. Good to have the Hylers home. Amen. Keep Sister Donna in your prayers as she'll be ministering in Homer. It's a beautiful place, good people. But after good preaching, it becomes a long drive home. Take a nap. Yep. Yep. Well, I'll go peacefully. Everybody else won't. Anyway, today we're going to be looking at Judges chapter 4, verses 22 through 24 as our focus verses. And it says, "And behold, as Barak pursued Sisera, Jael came out to meet him and said unto him, Come, and I will show thee the man whom thou seekest. When he came into her tent, behold, Sisera lay dead, and the nail was in his temples. So God subdued on that day Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the children of Israel. And the hand of the children of Israel prospered and prevailed against Jabin, the king of Canaan, until they had destroyed Jabin, the king of Canaan." So today we're going to talk about God gives the victory. So our icebreaker is, who is the most heroic woman that you have known? There you go. Missy. Personally known. Grandmother. Your wife? That'll be the answer of a lot of husbands right now. Free brownie points, all on the table. For me, I would have to say it was my Aunt Pam. Now, I know that within my testimony, you had known that she had called right after the suicide. However, the reason I would say it is this woman had three separate times incurable diseases. Three separate times she died. Three separate times she came back completely healed. And so she developed this mentality, the only reason I'm in the hospital is because you need to hear about Jesus. To me, that's a pretty strong mentality to be going through that all the time. Because, boy, I know I can pout over a hard flu. She was up in the ICU witnessing the nurses, telling them, well, you work so much, obviously I needed to come to you. What we have here is we have the story of Deborah. And since I was given the privilege of getting to teach today, and for the first time I get a whole chapter, we're just going to go through the chapter. Amen. Matt's familiar with this kind of format. Thomas has heard me do it. So right from verse 1, and the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord when Ehud died, was dead. Boy, it's amazing how many people will backslide when the man of God passes on. It still happens today. When a pastor passes on, all of a sudden, people were never following Jesus. They were following him. Now, I'm not trying to disrespect any pastor, any office, because I believe in the fivefold, and I do believe in submission. However, no office was ever given to replace him. And so the loss of the man of God should be mourned, but his life should be honored in that we continue to follow who he was following. But I do recognize that the loss of a man of God can open you up to do wrong. One of the hardest times I ever faced spiritually was the moment Brother Hernandez passed away. It became a dark, dark season. I wish I would have listened more intently to his teachings, because he prophesied a lot about what I was going to spiritually face that year, and I didn't even know it. He talked about it. He talked about how when the devil walks in your room, he talks about when God stops talking to you. He talks about when darkness comes on you. He talked about it, but boy, it was different when it was happening. You ever notice it's different walking through it than being preached to? And then somehow when you're in it, it's really hard to be preached to. Couldn't be preached to before, couldn't be preached to during. But I'm glad I caught it after. But they started to do evil. Here's this cycle. This defines this entire book. It's a treacherous cycle. It's a cycle that the church still suffers today. Church members will come, church members will do better, church members will leave, and on the cycle of the drain. And I've told people in that cycle, without any judgment, you had better pray that the Lord comes back while you're here on this cycle, because you're playing some serious spiritual Russian roulette right now. That's not a game I'd want to play. But the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. Now, this is amazing in verse 2, because this king's, the previous name from the exact city, was destroyed by Joshua. And yet, this is a royalty name. So another man possessing the same name is raised up and takes over the city. And it astounds me that you can hear about elders preach about their battles, preach about their victories, and the next generation has to fight it too, because they're opening the door for its resurrection. We've heard about Jezebel. We've read about Jezebel. Make no mistake, that spirit is alive and well in the church. And since God is a giver of good gifts, I've asked him to personally watch that thing be thrown into the fiery pit. Because I want to say adios. We will not miss you. But the name Jabin means he is wise, or he perceives or he understands, and it's talking he. When you're doing wrong and you're doing evil, you are opening the door for the enemy to bring you under subjection through trying to define who he is. Have you ever noticed that in some of your darkest times, the enemy can distort the image of God by speaking to you? How many of us know that this word says he'll never forsake us? And yet how many have asked, God, are you there? Who told you he wasn't? The word didn't. Prayer didn't. Man of God didn't. But something did. It's told me before. And I've been dumb enough to ask, as if what the enemy told me is truth. We can believe the lie if we love not the truth. And they weren't willing to follow. And so now the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he had 900 chariots of iron. Now, if you'll remember, in the beginning of the book of Judges, they tried to cast out, and they couldn't because they had chariots of iron. Sometimes the enemy has the ability to hold his ground. Just because the gates of hell shall not prevail against the church doesn't mean you get to go rogue and kick in anything and everything you want without permission. There is a time and a season, and it is when God says so. I have had to learn there are two types of people in the church: those that don't want to fight and those that need to learn to quit. I got an amen out of Sister Glover. Must be true. There are those that don't want to push into spiritual battles, and there are those that need to learn to sheathe their swords. Because if we can't learn to sheathe our swords, we can get to the point that we're no longer listening to the king and we're willing to strike down anything we see. And if you become that person, all the enemy has to do is hide behind someone in the church. And the enemy doesn't need to devour them. You will. They had chariots of iron tied to the horses. Does it not say you're being wearied by the footmen? How are you going to contend with the horses? You ever notice that in spiritual warfare, when you really get into it, weariness really is part of it? It's been a week for me. I'm preaching victory when it's been a week. Ain't no victory been had. But that's okay. That's okay. Because nothing has changed about who he is or what he said. The only thing the enemy managed to do was bruise their knuckles. That's all right. I don't mind spiritual warfare on the level that I told Thomas, I was telling others. Really take a step back and let the enemy hit you. Whatever he hits you with, that's as far as it goes. Take a breather. In Job, when the enemy came against him, he never told him. If the enemy talks to you about it, he doesn't have permission. And so he needs you to give permission instead. And so, whatever the initial hit is, that's where God has capped it off. Realize you're still standing. Give them praise and glory. Here they are with the chariots, trying to weary the saints, and they're crying because of it. Don't let weariness cause you to cry. Let weariness cause you to praise. There's Deborah, a prophetess. She was judging. She's judging under the palm tree. And she sent and called Barak in verse 6. And she says, go and draw towards Tabor and take with thee 10,000 men of the children of Naphtali and the children of Zebulun. And I will draw unto thee the river Kishon, Sisera, the captain of Jabin's army. So she's prophesying, telling him, go up to this mount. And I looked at this. This mount has sheer cliffs. Because when God decides the battle, he's going to pick the terrain that handicaps the enemy's strengths. Wherever your foot goes, I have given it to you. Quit naming the valley after your enemy. If you're in there, it doesn't belong to them. It belongs to me and who I'm walking with. The only reason I'm in this valley is because you convince somebody else you own it. God's tired of you. He's tired of the enemy claiming that valley. So he sends in a champion. A lot of us love to pray the prayers. Here am I, send me. And then all of a sudden we're asking God, where are you taking me? Why are you sending me here? Because you wrote a blank check. You wrote a love offering with your life. You said, use me. And then I start whining because I'm being used up. But here they are. In verse 7, we got to get a hold of this. And I will draw unto thee Sisera, the captain of Jabin's army. Realize that if you're walking according to what God said, if the enemy is coming against you, it is not by the enemy's doing. We sit here and talk about backlash. Oh, well, the enemy's going to come and hit you. Well, if you're walking according to the Lord, the enemy is forced to come to you. And the reason is because the enemy's about ready to be destroyed. We need to stop being focused on the presence of the enemy and instead realize that the presence of the enemy is telling us that we're about ready to see victory. Because we can't lose. You can't lose. The Lord doesn't know how to do it. The cross looked like defeat, and it's the greatest victory we've ever known. He doesn't know how to lose. And he didn't even raise his finger in that fight. But I read when he does, it's not even a fair fight at that point. God speaks a word and he wins. That's how insignificant our enemy is. If we can realize that in the end, God speaks a word and it's victory, then what do you think he's releasing into you when he gives you promise? He's giving you the word of victory that says where you're going, nothing can stop you. I am taking you here, and there is nothing that can come up before your face that can stop you from going. So don't listen to it. Because it can't drag you out, but it can convince you to turn. And so, In verse 8, it says, if thou will go with me, then I will go. But if thou will not go with me, then I will not go. And she responds, I will go, but notwithstanding the journey that thou takest shall not be for thine honor. Amen. There's a theme today. But hear me. He says, I won't go unless the one who spoke the promise goes with me. Church, I don't mean any disrespect to anybody's ministry when I say this. Because I hold ministers in high regard if you're willing to sacrifice to walk with the Lord. Because it's going to take sacrifice. It's going to take commitment. You don't pastor a church and not take hits when nobody else is looking. If you don't think that that man's prayer closet is not a war room, you're wrong. If you don't think the weight of this city doesn't weigh on him and he needs prayer to help hold it up, you're wrong. But when we are more excited for the minister rather than the Lord, I'm not going to go into battle unless you go with me. Shouldn't it be, I'm not going into battle unless he goes with me? I hear it. Oh, when this person comes and they do this revival, there's going to be deliverance. Why is there not deliverance now? Do we not have Jesus here? What are we doing? I mean, like, come on. Well, when they come, there's going to be healing. I thought it was when he came. Like, I'm glad that you operate in the gifts. I'm glad. I'm not disrespecting ministry. But I don't prop ministry up above who steps into this house every Sunday. And maybe if the church got a hold of, instead of holding on to our garbage waiting for a minister, if we dealt with it, maybe the minister, instead of dealing with everything that we know, they would start taking us into things we haven't even thought of. You might see a great shift in the way the pastor's messages are. Not because his preaching is awful. I'm not saying that. It's great preaching. But if we heed to it, it might grow and develop in what God's giving. That he can trust us with more direction. But she says, it's not going to be to your honor. Oh, God's going to get his. God's going to get his honor. But you will receive no honor if your heart cannot give him honor for the victory. Because we're talking about go get 10,000 men. You know who the next judge is? Gideon. You think maybe it's this story as to why the Lord said 10,000 is too much? You'll think it came by your hand. Where do you think God maybe came up with that? Because 10,000. Oh, we had a great victory. We did, huh? You were just whining about chariots. But now, in verse 11, there is something that we need to heed. Where it says, now, I guess his name's Heber, the Kenite. And it says, he had severed himself from the Kenites. Now notice, he had separated, he had divided himself from this people. And yet, he's known as Heber the Kenite. Because you're known by who you are born into. Doesn't matter if you separate. Our backsliders are having their identity stolen. But even though they're not here, it hasn't erased the name. It hasn't erased the name. Now hear me. If we realize that the name is attached, then why are you weeping and wailing thinking that the name that drug them out is greater than the name that's been called over them? Why? Because you temporarily see their absence? The ones in my family that have known this are backslidden. But that has no bearing on my prayer. Because I know if God could bring a bunch of atheist, God-hating people to the water once, what stops him from bringing them back? If the enemy is capable of dragging them out of the church, why do I think God is incapable of bringing them back into the church? He is the name above every name. And so here I get some strength when I think about the backslidden. You may be separated from us, but ain't nothing changed over your calling. You still belong to Jesus Christ. And there is no minister anywhere that has been given the eraser to blot out a name. That only belongs to one. And so for us to be like, well, let me tell you. Well, I'm going to tell you, don't do that. I wouldn't want your odds. Wouldn't want your odds. Position yourself so that you can be secured in this. But I also see if a man is stuck with the name from the world, how much more is heaven's name attached? And so now Sisera gathered all his chariots in verse 13 and all the people that were with him. Get into the mindset that intense battles are a good thing. I don't mind intense battles. I hate long ones. And so what I see is when the enemy is forced to gather all of their resources against me, I know that it's going to be a swift and decisive victory rather than a long duration, step by step. Let's take a little, let's take a little, let's take a little. I'd rather get it in one go. I love the enemy to hit me from every side because, hey, we can shoot at them from every side. When you're under attack, there's two things that are constantly under attack. Don't pray. Don't praise. It's disarming you. And while I believe in the word, and it is the sword of the Spirit, and I will wield that thing mercilessly. I don't believe in letting the enemy breathe. I also realize, being on a physical battlefield, air superiority is the key to combat. And the only way you get air superiority is to remain in communication with that which is above you. Now, if the church can understand this, that if you are surrounded, do not worry. Start to call in the airstrikes. Lord, I'm surrounded. This is where he does his greatest works. I love being put up in a hard place. Not because I'm masochistic and I enjoy suffering. I don't enjoy spiritual warfare. I don't enjoy the heaviness. I don't enjoy the misery of it. But I do enjoy getting to the place that where we are about ready to see something I can't produce. When you get to the impossible happens. When I'm doing everything just to hang on, God's about ready to show me He can walk. Just because I'm being sunk by the waves doesn't mean I'm going to be swallowed up in them. How many here have had trials in their life? How many here have had trials that you were certain you're not making it out of this one? Right? Well, then explain this. Here we are. So when I get gathered against, I'm excited. In verse 15, and the Lord discomfited Sisera with the edge of the sword. See, you can't win any battles if you're unwilling to pick up your sword. I tell people, read. Have you read today? No, I haven't. I'm getting beat up. You're in a fight and you don't want your weapon at all? Let me tell you, in the Marine Corps, we take our rifles serious. It's big deal to us. To the point that we had a Marine who couldn't keep track of his rifle ever. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Could not keep track of his rifle. That man just left it all the time. I couldn't understand it. Because I would forget everything else before I forgot my weapon. I'm not wearing socks. I'm not wearing boots. I just might come out there in shorts. It doesn't matter. But I got my rifle. And so, through all the adjustments, all the corrections, all the talkings that the Marines love to do, he wasn't getting it. And so we figured out a way to make it sink in. We took his rifle and we put him on parole. Not parole, we put him on patrol. And we gave him a yardstick. And you became our IED checker. So if there was any suspicious thing on the roadside, it was your job to poke it. Because if you blew up, it didn't matter. You weren't going to be defending me with your rifle anyway. At least you have the ability to die a hero. If you can't cover me, then go save me. It only took one day. Now, I'm certain that he's probably in a VA counselor talking about this. May the Lord forgive me. However, what is it that God has to teach us until we won't let this go? How many things do we have to poke? How many times do we have to feel exposed and defenseless before we realize this is it? And it says in verse 15, so that Sisera lighted down off his chariot and fled away on his feet. Now this beginning of the verse said, and the Lord, and then the enemy left and fled from the source of his strength that made him immovable. They couldn't drive them out because of chariots, and all of a sudden he's willing to abandon them. Because the Lord did it. Some of our victories are waiting when we realize it's going to be Him and not us. Greater is He that is in me, not greater am I now that He's in me. Just because I have the shepherd did not change me from being a lamb. Just because He's the lion doesn't mean that I get to go out there and be a lion by myself. It's Him. Now in verse 17 it says, there was peace between Jabin the king of Hazor and the house of Heber the Kenite. Don't be making peace with the enemy. Ever. Compromise will quickly conquer. Now Jael went out and met him and said, turn in, my lord, turn in to me. Now there's much commentary on this, whether or not he had been there previously because she's greeting him so familiar. I'm not going to touch on that. But at the end of this verse, and when he returned unto her into the tent, she covered him with a mantle. What a tragedy when we allow the enemy into our house and we're using our mantle to cover them rather than to conquer them. That I'm using what God gave to try and conceal what is in my home rather than to drive it out. And he said unto her, give me, I pray, a little water to drink. This is the nature of the enemy. When a wicked spirit goes out from a man, he walks in dry places seeking rest and finding none. So he says, let's go back. And so, have you ever noticed that when you're dealing with an enemy in your house, you start to spiritually dry up? For I am thirsty, and she opened a bottle of milk. How the enemy wants to consume and drink your promise. And notice this in verse 20. Stand in the door of the tent and say, when they ask, is there any man here? And thou shalt say, no. Does not God say, behold, I stand at the door and knock? And the enemy, when he's there, he says, stand at the door and tell him no one's here. There is a difference between the enemy and the Spirit of the Lord. Is when the enemy is in the temple, he wants to remain hidden. When the Lord is in the temple, he wants to be revealed. He wants everybody to know that he's in you. When the enemy's in you, he wants no one to know until it's going to maximize destruction over you. Don't think that he's complicit in what you're doing. He's biding his time to destroy you. He's not trying to hide your crimes. He's picking his moment to maximize its effect. And so, verse 21, and then Jael took a nail of the tent and took a hammer in her hand and went softly unto him. I will propose to you today that maybe one of the reasons we fail to get so much victory over our enemy is because we don't know how to be quiet. We don't know how to hold our peace when God's ordering our steps to conquer. We start dealing with the enemy and all of a sudden it's complaint. Oh, Lord, why are you doing this? Now, the enemy, he doesn't understand prayer. He can't listen in on it. For if the princes of this world knew, they wouldn't crucify the Lord. Which tells me you didn't hear a single prayer he prayed in that garden. But the enemy does understand complaint. The enemy does understand grumbling. and you will alert the enemy to your presence if you are grumbling towards him. Be quiet. Hold your peace. Be still. Know he is the Lord. Let him walk you right up. They won't even know it. And she smote the nail in his temples and fastened it under the ground. Now, what's amazing about this is this nail, it's the same word that's used for the pins in the Lord's tabernacle. It says the instruments thereof, which means tools. So a hammer had to be consecrated. When you have what is found in God's house available in your house, you have the means to destroy anything that resides there. But here's the thing, and fastened it to the ground. Make sure your house is built upon the rock. That way what you're nailing down stays there. If you're trying to nail it into shifting sands, you're going to find that all it takes is a little bit of storm for it to slither away. And you'll be dealing with it over and over again. Nail it into Christ. Nail it into Christ. Verse 22. And she says, come and I will show thee the man whom thou seekest. And when he came into her tent, behold, Sisera lay dead. Now I want to tread upon this lightly, but I'm going to make a declaration. I believe that the church withholds God's glory when we're ashamed of revealing what was in our house that he defeated. Just because it was there, don't let it not be a testimony. We're trying to cover up, God deliver me. What did he deliver you of? Something? Okay. But she said, come and see. Realize, whatever is you're dealing with in your home is going to come out. The only question is it still breathing when it's found out? And if it's in your home, I have found God doesn't drive it out. You can pray all day, Lord, take this from me. Lord, get this away from me. Lord, take this out. Lord, take this out. But the fact that it's come into your home, it's only going to be dealt with when you're ready to kill it. Says he drives them out while the enemy was in their houses. I will drive out the inhabitants of the land while they're still in their homes. But when he comes into yours, it's now you have to kill this thing. Quit waiting for God to drive it out and instead drive the tent peg in. Realize what you've been anchored in and kill it. And realize in verse 24, as we come to the end of the chapter, the hand of the children of Israel prospered. Because when victory comes into the house, it overflows and it goes to the people. And as we're talking about victory, I want to focus on one thing as I close. Is that it doesn't matter where you may face the enemy. It doesn't matter if you face it out there. It doesn't matter if you face it in here. It doesn't matter if you face it in your house. It has not changed the fact that God wishes to give you victory over it. Just because you lit it in your home, don't think that God wishes for you to be subjected to it. If it has become intimate, realize that in this house, God's willing to equip you with the weapons of warfare to go home and kill it. Amen? Because God desires to give victory. So let us greet one another. Let us get ready to worship. And let us get ready to lift our voice in victorious praise. Amen?